Well, paper dolls, the kind that you could cut out or punch out, were a common enough toy for girls when I was growing up, but their history goes far beyond my childhood, and through the decades, their images have reflected attitudes and social changes. According to our next guest, when it comes to African Americans, those dolls often depict the caricatures and racial stereotypes that define their place, role, and status in society. Joining me now is Arabella Grayson. She's a writer and award-winning photographer and the collector of over 300 black paper dolls from around the world. That collection is the latest exhibition at the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures here in Kansas City. Arabella Grayson is in town for the opening of the exhibit, Stereotypes to Civil Rights: Black Paper Dolls in America, and will be back for 3 days of lectures and workshops in April. And Arabelle, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I never thought in my career I'd be leading a discussion on paper dolls, but here we are, okay? We're going to do this together, all right?
Okay.
This all started with one doll in a birthday card. Tell us when that was and what caught your attention about her.
This was around 1994, and I received a birthday card, and inside was a small paper doll booklet. A $1 paper doll booklet called The Little Caribbean Girl. And
Uh-oh. Yeah.
I had never seen a black paper doll before, or couldn't recall ever seeing one. I played with paper dolls as a little girl.
But white paper dolls.
White paper dolls, right. And so she was adorable. Her name was Nyla, and she had these traditional costumes, from the different islands, Guadeloupe, Jamaica, Trinidad, and stuff. And so I was in the process of working on a book project, and I found myself, I set her up on my desk, right? And then I decided, oh, I really like her. I'm going to cut her out, right? So I cut her out, and then I put affixed magnets to the back of her, and then I stuck her on my refrigerator, right? So every time I would go in the refrigerator, I would change her outfit. I mean, she became like a focal point for me. So I was in a Barnes and Noble, and I decided I was going to go to the children's section and see if I could find other black paper dolls. I mean, because was she really just kind of an anomaly to me? And I found Addie, who is a part of the American Girls series. And I wasn't familiar with the American Girls series, so I stood in the store
I
and
may have heard of it, yeah.
I opened up the packaging and I thought, oh dear, this is 1994. And she was published in 1994, and I said, she's a slave. But on the, yeah, so on the packaging, she had her little, like, she's it looked like she was going to a church picnic. She had a little nap, a little kerchief with a lunch, and she had on a beautiful pink frock, and she had a little bird cage, a little gilded bird cage. But then the text, I'm saying, but she was enslaved and then she escaped. And I thought, 1994, if I had a daughter, would this be a paper doll I would feel comfortable giving her? And then how do I explain this history, right?
And this started a whole series of interests for you, it sounds like.
It did. It did. And so in that literature, though, I'm standing in Barnes and Noble, it said that the first black paper doll was published in 1863. That was the genesis of this collection. Because I wanted to find out who was that first black paper doll.
And when you started, how were you able to determine when they were made and who was making them? How did you figure all that out?
Okay, I am.
You're a sleuth, it sounds like.
Yeah, I love research and I'm a writer, right? So one of the things you have to do as a writer is you do the research, right? And so I decided that I was going to, well, first I wanted to find out what the identity was. And then I'm like a pit bull when I get on some track, right? And so I said, well, how do I even start, right? And I decided I'll go to a doll show. I'll try to, because I'm going to write an article, so I have to interview some people and stuff, right? So I'll go to a doll show. So I went to the Cow Palace, and then I started getting old
San
magazines
Francisco?
in San
Yeah.
Francisco, old magazines. And so some of them had paper dolls in them. They weren't black, but at least I was starting to get the history of paper dolls because it never showed up on my radar. I mean, just like
Sure.
here I am in your studio, you
Yeah.
never thought paper dolls, right?
Well, yeah, that's for
Yeah.
sure.
So then I saw that you could, they have paper doll dealers and stuff.
Really?
And I said, yeah. So I thought, oh, this is interesting. So I called a paper doll dealer, Janie Barrett. And I said, oh, I'm a writer and I'm looking for black paper dolls. And she was like, good luck. They're, if you find 25, you know,
yeah,
that'll be a lot.
Yeah.
But I kept doing some research and I started going online. And then I started seeing some images that I found very disturbing, some caricatured images, mm-hmm. right? But then I did find out who that 1863 paper doll was.
Yeah. And it was?
Topsy, another slave girl. Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Topsy, the fictional character
yeah.
in Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin,
there
right?
There you go, yeah.
So she's the, like the first advertising promotion for a book with Eva St. Clair, little Eva St. Clair. And mm-hmm. so they're printed as paper dolls, right?
Well, some of these paper dolls that you found, as you mentioned, were highly questionable, so very stereotypical. And I can tick off a few here. The round face, mammy, sambos, and pickaninnies, you mm-hmm. know. And describe one or two of these to us.
Well, you know, there's the Topsy from Uncle Tom's Cabin. So she's described as odd and goblin-like. And so you see they have their hairs all sticking out, you know, exaggerated features, bulging eyes,
mm-hmm.
the same thing that you see in the movies,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the toys were, or the paper dolls, a lot of them were caricatured for amusement, you know, to reinforce a lot of the stereotypes.
I imagine they reinforced them pretty effectively.
They did. They did.
Yeah. Were these among the earliest of the black paper dolls that you found?
Yes, but then there were always exceptions, like the paper doll, the 1885 articulated black paper doll that's on the invitation that the museum is using, is a cute little girl. And there were a series of four of them printed in 1885 by a company in England, and they were distributed in the United States by the Denison Company
mm-hmm.
in New York. And so they're just adorable little kids, you know. And so that's, you do find the exceptions.
Yeah. What are some of the other stereotypes portrayed that you came across?
Well, you know, there's the dandy, the black dandy, the black guy, you know, in the swallowtail, know, with a very colorful clothing and the top hat. So they're dancing minstrels
mm-hmm.
or they're playing instruments. Early imaging.
But the wrong relationship now. The Cosby family. You didn't find the typical African American family out there.
No, and mm-hmm. that's an interesting question because you don't find paper doll families until like the 1990s. We get Martin Luther King's family.
Oh, really?
There's the Gullah Gullah family. And that's interesting because in the 1900s, when paper dolls were so ubiquitous, and you have the standard middle class white family of paper dolls,
yeah.
there's always a black servant. There's a butler or a maid or a mm-hmm. nanny or a nurse or a cook. So you have them as an appendage of a thriving white family. So you don't get black families and you don't even get black bride and grooms. A family was constituted two kids. And even the 1893 Aunt Jemima family, it's Aunt Jemima and I believe it's four or five of her kids. But there's no man in that family.
Yeah. Arabella Grayson is my guest. She's in town for the opening exhibit, Stereotypes, the Civil Rights, Black Paper Dolls in America. This is all going on at the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures in Kansas City, not far from our studios here today. So you're coming across all this stuff. And what are you thinking you're going to do with it?
Well, originally, I was going to write an article. You know, I never, ever intended to amass a collection. So I was going to write this article. and
lay all this out.
I lay it out because I just thought it was a fascinating history, mm-hmm. you know, and I realized that no history had really been written. So I was just, you know, piecing it together and collecting the paper dolls. And a girlfriend came over one day, and I had just received a package in the mail. And I took it out and I showed it to her, and she was like, "Whoa, what is this?" I said, "Oh, you think this one is interesting?" And I pulled out the box from under my desk and started showing them to her. And she said, "Arbella, you need to have an exhibition."
Yeah, no kidding.
And
Is this the first one you've done here in Kansas City, or have you been doing them?
No, my first exhibition was in 2004.
Okay.
So she said, "You really need to have an exhibition." And I thought, well, maybe that might work. And at that point, I had 45 paper dolls. And I'm a Mills College graduate and alum. So I went to a women's college, right? So mm-hmm. I thought, oh, well, let me just send an email off to Mills and see. And I got an immediate response. Yes, sight unseen.
Wow.
They were like, yes, we want it. And so there was a 4-week exhibition at Mills in their rare book room in the library.
Hmm.
And they got so much interest that they extended it by 2 or 3 weeks. But the press that they got from that small exhibition, I then put together a press kit. I have an undergraduate degree in public relations mm-hmm. marketing background. So I put together a press kit. And one night I had a dream that my little paper doll collection was at the Smithsonian. So I was living in D.C. at the time, emailed a friend of mine and said, "You won't believe this. I have this dream," right? I mean, I got up literally. It's like 12 o'clock. And I sent it to her. And she emailed me back and she said, "You won't believe this. A friend of mine just got appointed interim director."
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you see how when things align?
Yeah.
And so she said, "I'll do an email introduction." I never met the man. About 2 weeks later, someone on his staff, a curator, said, "Okay, we're in the middle of planning. You know, they do the calendar 5 to 7 years out. Can you send us something?" Well, because I had the press kit, of course. So I went ahead and I mailed it. And then about 2 weeks later, they said, "Okay, we need some more information." And so I put it some more stuff together. And I said, "Well, you know, I'll just drive on over there, right? I live in Silver Spring. I'll just drive."
Right.
And because I feel like I'm more compelling in person, right?
Right, sure.
So I went ahead and I took it and I got the name of the receptionist. And about 17, 18 months later, I had a 7-month exhibition at the Smithsonian.
That's just amazing. And people are this is resonating with people. Why? Why is this connection so powerful? Why is there so much interest in what you're putting together?
Because we've all been children. We all have memories of
mm-hmm.
play.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't realize is how we're being socialized
yes.
through that play.
Yes.
And so the spin that I've put on it is that, you know, these paper dolls are artifacts of material culture.
Mm-hmm.
Toys speak to what the values are of a society.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm asking the question, you know, who were these created for? Who was playing with them? And what is the statement that they're making? Who are we? What are they telling the truth? Who am I when I look at these, when I play with these images? What subliminal messages? You know, so I've been.
And you answer those questions how? What is the statement that's getting made based on what you found?
Can I read a quote? Because I wrote a whole article around this.
Yeah.
So I came across a very provocative question in a book that I found called Autobiography in Her Own Image by Judith Wilson. And she raises a question. She says, "How do we know who we are? Answer one, society tells us. Society first in the form of family and other caregivers. Later, we learn our place increasingly via messages from institutional mechanisms, government, schools, media. Answer two, if society tells us lies, how can we know who we are? Answer three, maybe the only thing to know is that we need to keep on searching."
Hmm.
So I tell people, you need to ask the questions, and then you need to go on your own journey.
Mm-hmm.
And as parents and caregivers, we need to be very mindful of what we are telling intentionally and unintentionally to those people who we are in charge of.
Those are great words. If our listeners want to chime in here on our very interesting, a far more interesting conversation about paper dolls than I ever expected to be having, just for the record here, Arabella.
Thank you.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here at UpToDate. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. A few minutes ago, you said a decade ago or 12 years ago, you had 46 paper dolls. I'm wondering how many you have today, or am I afraid to ask?
Well, the passion turned into an obsession.
I was going to say.
Okay, it's just taken me down a journey that I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So 45 paper dolls at Mills College. When I come back to Washington, D.C. about 2-3 weeks later, there's a package. Bruce Patrick Jones, whose original artwork is on display in this exhibition, sent me a package of paper dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Some reproductions, some original paper dolls. I have gone to, at this point, 3 or 4 paper doll conventions. I feel like I fell into an alternate universe here.
Mm-hmm.
But there are annual paper doll conventions, international paper doll conventions.
Who knew?
I know. I had no idea.
Yeah.
There's a guild.
Well, how are you received at these things? Are you rocking their world a little bit? I imagine you are.
You imagine correctly.
Yes. Here she comes again.
Exactly.
Here's the woman who's ruining our fun.
Well, you know, it's, yes, in some ways, you know, because even when I showed up in 2003 for the Cleveland Convention, I thought it was very amusing. I didn't feel like I had even set foot on the property. I had parked the car, the rental car, in the parking lot before I even entered the hotel. It was almost like they knew I was there, right?
The cameras were
out. Right, because, you know, it's not
watch
like
out for her.
Right, because it's not a lot of Black people at the convention, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe, I want to say 5 people maybe. And the girlfriend who drove into the, I mean, you know, she.
Yeah.
So, but the community is so embracing. The nicest people, you know, it's so interesting too, because I just came from Tim Wise and he was talking about Minnesota nice and Midwestern nice.
Yeah.
So, but really a group of very, very nice, helpful people.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my collection, this is, I know, roundabout. So I have over 300. I'm thinking maybe close to 400 at this point. A lot of the paper dolls people have sent to me. People have found me online and they'll say, okay, we had this one paper doll in the attic, black paper doll we didn't know what to do with. And so people have been sending
me.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You've become the repository.
I have become the repository, the keeper, you know. The most fascinating story, though, was during that Mills College exhibition, there was a woman who lived in the Bay Area, Gertrude Kahn, who was terminally ill with cancer. And she had amassed, I mean, just an archive of books and magazines and art and artifacts, a lot of it dealing with African-American Black culture.
Mm-hmm.
She was a woman who was raised in Germany. As a little girl, she lived in Nazi Germany, and she had married an East Indian man, right? So she was looking for someone to leave some of her literature with. And she contacted Mills College, and she then was able to get in contact with me. And she said she wanted someone who she felt had the courage to speak the truth, to have the research material. And so through her son, she passed shortly thereafter. I was able to go to her home, and it was just incredible because he said she's told us, whatever you see that you want.
Oh, wow.
Take.
Wow.
I mean, it just overwhelming generosity.
It's just amazing to me, the older I get, that the different interests that people have, you become interested in black paper dolls, and sooner or later, you're going to find other people that you can connect with who can help you on your journey here. They're out there, no matter what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do the research, and I thought that it was an important piece of American history. This is not black history. Mm-hmm. This is America's history. You know, and what's been so interesting to me, when I look at the Topsy paper doll and when I look at the Articulated Baby 1885 from England, when I started researching the history of toys, I see that after the Civil War, there was a concerted effort to put out racist toys to reinforce Jim Crow laws.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, so on every level.
I'm wondering where we are today with all this. How healthy, in your view, are paper dolls today and the way people of all different colors are being depicted?
Well, you know, paper dolls had their heyday earlier. So they're
are they still around?
They are still around, and they're like novelty items. But I think what's happening, particularly now, there's been this boom in the last, I'd say, 5 years in coloring books for adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think paper dolls are also getting more traction, but they're online. They're online paper dolls where you can switch the, click this and switch the outfits and stuff, and the magnet paper dolls and stuff.
Yeah.
I think I've done workshops. I got a grant from the Awesome Foundation in New York to do paper doll parties in the park. And what was interesting to me is when I do these workshops, the number of fathers that I have who are bringing their sons, they want to have a bonding experience where they're using their imaginations.
Mm-hmm.
The number of teenagers that people say, oh, teens aren't going to come. I did a workshop at the Crocker Art Museum. I was expecting maybe 50 people. 450 people showed up.
No kidding.
It was overwhelming, 8 volunteers, but 45 minutes before the doors open, they're like 3 15, 16-year-old girls wanting to come in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, wait, well, we're not open or whatever. Come back. You know, can you come back later? I really appreciate you coming. Can you come back, you know, later? And somebody said, they're not coming back. And they came back with more friends.
Oh, no kidding.
So the paper dolls, you know, create a paper doll in your likeness and stuff. There's just real interest. I think it's dispelling some of these gender roles, you know. So when you have fathers bringing their sons and it's like a family day, it's getting people away, unplugging from all the gadgets, the electronic things.
I wanted to ask you just quickly, we did a little search on Amazon and came across for paper dolls and came across the Barack and Michelle Obama paper doll and cutout book. Just real quickly here, what's the rarest doll in your collection?
I would say the rarest doll in my collection, the Tom Thumb Topsy paper doll. Topsy came out in maybe 4 versions, 1863, 1885. I think there was a 93 or something like that.
Yeah.
The Tom Thumb version, she's like maybe an inch and a half, and
right.
She came in a little envelope with 3 dresses, sold for 10 cents.
Wow. I should point out that Arabella Grayson will be, her exhibition, Stereotypes to Civil Rights, Black Paper Dolls in America, opens Saturday, runs through August. There's an opening reception today at 5:30 at the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures. And you have a book in all this, I hope?
I have several manuscripts.
Yeah.
That there have been interest generated, and so nothing quite published yet.
You got to get there at some point.
Thank you. And the media and this interview, hopefully someone's listening. One of these publishers who's sitting on my manuscript will
take
the initiative.
Thank you so much for your
Thank
time.
You.
You bet. Really enjoyed it. On Monday's program, Money and Marriage with our financial panel, and we see if it's time to rethink early childhood education. Our theme music is composed by Bobby Watson. We had help this week from KCUR's Linda Scher, Bill Brownlee, Danny Alexander, Lisa Rodriguez, and Caperton Morton. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. And it's a day of great sadness around here. We say goodbye to assistant producer Beth Lipoff, who's headed off to Washington, D.C. Beth, thanks for everything. We're going to miss you around here. I'm Steve Kraske. Have a great weekend, all. And you are up to date.